1-2. Struck him out. Ball game. Cubs win. 10-2 the final. What's the thing I say?
Sing that song?
Yeah.
All right, Boog with Nicole on the Marquee Network. Welcome back, 670 The Score. We've got the Cubs and Angels, a weekend series with Pat, Ron, and Zach coming up. And again, I'm on the record. You have got to win this series, period. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And the Tech Zone, by the way, brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. You can save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Andy Martinez is joining us. Andy covers the Cubs for the Marquee Sports Network out of Quincy University. How are you, Andy?
I'm doing well, Chuck. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Before we get into Cubs and your thoughts on the ball club, I want to put you on the opportunity to tell young people, especially listening, how does a guy like yourself go from Quincy University to Marquee?
Yeah, so I grew up in Cicero, and it's so funny because in Quincy, going in college, to be fully transparent, this is really cool to be talking to you, Chuck. We've not talked on the radio, but in college, like there was no way to watch the Bulls. So when I was getting my Bulls basketball, it was radio feeds. It was the Bulls network listening to you and Bill Wennington. So this is pretty cool. But yeah, like for me, it was going down to school there, worked at the newspaper there, and then just summer internships. I interned at the Daily Herald. Out in Arlington Heights and worked with Bruce Miles covering some Cubs stuff, and then worked with the Daily Herald after I graduated covering high school sports for them. So it's a long winding road. It's not too dissimilar to what pros have to go to, in the sense of like you got to grind your way to get to where you want to be. It's definitely not an easy path for sure.
Yep. I would agree with you there, but the importance of internships, talk about them for a moment.
Yeah, no, you learned so much in that. Like that to me is, I still remember the first baseball game I ever covered, the first Major League Baseball game I ever covered. It was the White Sox. I was shadowing Scott Greger, and it was the 10-year anniversary of the White Sox winning the 05 World Series. They had everyone there, right? It was Paul Konerko, Ozzie Guillen, like all these guys are back in town. And that was really cool. And being in a Major League dugout, getting to see kind of how it works, like what the grind is all about. And as soon as you do it, you're like kind of hooked, right? You get that first taste and you just want to keep doing it. And you know, I'm lucky and fortunate enough that those doors have paved the way to be where I'm at now.
Yeah. Great stuff. So you get the call and you interview for the position at Marquee. Tell me about that. And did you go in, were you nervous or were you confident that something like this could happen in your world?
I would be lying if I said I wasn't nervous, right? I think you're always nervous when you're doing some sort of interview for sure. But you know, when I think the best thing you can kind of do is try not to show those nerves, right? To portray yourself like you're confident, even if you're not, right? You act like you belong, like you deserve the job. And I had that mentality. I knew I could do it, and it worked out for me. I mean, it's easier said than done. I think you can say that all you want, but to actually do it, I think it takes a little bit of practice, and that's kind of what allows you to get to where you want to be.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, the importance of internships. I had a glorified internship at a radio station in Cleveland. I had just graduated from Ohio University, and so my job was to go into the locker rooms, get 20-second sound bites from the Cleveland baseball team or the Cavaliers, whatever. And so I'm at a party. This is a true story. Honest to God, true story. I'm at a party, and this is like mid-June of 1977. And I'm dating myself, but this is a true story, Andy. It's mid-June 1977. I'm at a party, and I meet a girl at the party, and she says, yeah, my dad is involved with the ball club. He's in the front office doing stuff, and they're going to fire Frank Robinson tonight. I went, what? He said, yeah, Frank Robinson's they're going to fire him. I said, you're kidding, right? No. He's going to be fired tonight. Now, remember, Frank Robinson was a big name. I mean, he was the first black manager in Major League Baseball history. right? Remember? And so I'm thinking, wow. So I called someone close to the team, and I said, I don't want you to tell me yes or no, but if there's silence, then, you know, I can put two and two together. I mean, I was born at night, but not last night.
So right.
I said, so is Frank Robinson going to manage your team tomorrow? And there was silence. And there was silence. I'm telling you a true story here. And
right.
So instead of getting a second opinion, I went with the story. I called the radio station, and I said, Frank Robinson is out as manager of the Cleveland. Then their name was Cleveland Indians. And so I get this call from the general manager of the radio station. He said, who's your source? Well, I'm not going to tell him I met a girl at a party. I said, I think the source is pretty good. Yeah, right. So I can't believe I'm telling the story on the air, but I am. So now I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. Now, remember, Andy, this is before the days of the internet. No cell phones.
Right.
So now I race to the drugstore Sunday morning to see if the beat reporter had gotten the story. And there was no story about Frank Robinson being fired. And now there's a pit in my stomach, and I'm worried about it. So I'm thinking, oh, no, I screwed up. My name is going to be, I'm done in this business. And what happens? We get to the ballpark. They're playing Detroit. You could look this up. We get to the ballpark. The Tigers are playing Cleveland, and they call a press conference at 10 a.m. to announce Frank Robinson has been fired. Jeff Torborg is the new manager of the Cleveland Indians. That's a true story. And that was on an internship because of a girl at a party.
Right. And the beauty of that story is the number one lesson I remember from college and from all my journalism classes is if your mom tells you she loves you, check it out. Get a second source, right? Like, and that was exactly what you did, right? You right away you double checked it. That's the most crucial part.
Well, and fortunately it and so then all of a sudden, you know, the station's getting all these calls, they want me to come on, and here I am. I'm a kid. I'm literally a kid. I'm 22. And so whatever. Okay, so let's get to the Cubs. So am I far-fetched to think that they should be buyers and not sellers?
I mean, the way the team is built and the way the team was built in the offseason, I don't think in any it would have had to be a catastrophic failure for them to not be buyers. And I think it's kind of at the teetering point there. The National League, the fortunate thing for the Cubs is the National League is so there's so much in the middle that even though the Cubs are 8 games under 500 after today's win, they're still not completely out of the wild card picture, right? And you go on a winning streak, as we saw the Mets do. The Mets were a couple weeks ago, no one was counting them out. Everyone's saying, well, what are they going to get for Pete Alonso? What are they going to get for this? What are they going to get for that? And all of a sudden, it's like, well, what are they going to get at the deadline? They're definitely within striking distance. If you go on a kind of a run, you see the picture where they're definitely in buying mode. The question that I've had in terms of like if they are selling, what is there to sell, right? I mean, the obvious player that everyone points to is Cody Bellinger. That's not an easy player to trade away, just given his contract situation, where he's under control for this year, and then he's got player options for the next 2 years. So
correct.
A team doesn't really know what they're getting, right? Are you getting
absolutely? It would drive me crazy if I'm another GM. I'm thinking, wait a minute, I could be looking at a rental for like 60 games.
Exactly. And so, does another team want to give up a high end prospect for that?
No.
And if they don't, right? If they don't, then why do the Cubs trade him for a low level prospect, right?
Right. I get
and
it.
Knowing that they could bring him back. So that's the question. Some of the other players that are potential like trade candidates, quote unquote, would be two guys that have no trade clauses in Ian Happ and Seiya Suzuki. So those guys are kind of locked in. And after that, you're looking at guys that, I mean, you're not going to trade away Michael Bush, a rookie who's under team control for a long time. Not trading away Justin. You're not trading away any of these guys that are under control for a long time. So it really becomes a question of like, if you're going to sell, it's going to be maybe a reliever or two. And their bullpen had so many question marks that it's not like you're going to be getting a whole lot for a reliever. Like maybe a Tyson Miller would net you something nice, but at the same time, if it's going to be a lower level prospect, are you better off and hoping that you can go on a run and he can help you win some games to get back into the wild card picture? I think that's a million dollar question that Jed Hoyer and the Cubs are facing. And these next few weeks are going to kind of tell what ultimately they decide to do.
Yeah, they rebuilt the farm system, and I like Hawkins coming in from Cleveland, and I like the infrastructure. I love the foundation, and I just want this club to start saying, okay, you know what, we can sacrifice a prospect here or there, maybe if we have to put two in a trade. But I truly believe they're making a major mistake if they become sellers and not buyers. And I hope they don't do that, because I think the fan base here, were the expectations too high? I don't think so. They've got a really good ball club. I can't believe how poorly they're hitting, and I can't believe Morel. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but, I mean, you talk about a guy. I mean, if I'm a team and I'm thinking, do I really want to trade for him? I mean, I've got to see something out of him. I want to see some consistency. And I also want to see him, can he handle third on a day-in, day-out basis?
Yeah, that's kind of the conundrum the Cubs are in right now. Even throughout this whole season, he's been replaced defensively late in games at third base just because of the question marks about his defense. And statistically, advanced metrics, traditional statistics defensively, I mean, he's the worst defensive third baseman in baseball. And you knew there was going to be growing pains. You knew there was going to be some struggles with him playing every day. I don't think the Cubs thought it would be this drastic, right? And so that's a real question mark for a team that would be hypothetically trading for him. It's like, am I getting a DH or am I getting a third base? Like, what am I kind of getting? And Morel has been a streaky hitter his whole time as a major leaguer. He came up in 2022, lit the world on fire. But if you look at his last 2 months, he really, really struggled in the major leagues. Last year, he came up again, same thing in about mid-May, and just tore the cover off the ball. He was hitting really, really well. And then about the last month or so of the season, again, he really, really struggled. This year, he started off really well, was walking a lot, getting some home runs and hitting them in bunches kind of like he does. And now he's into another cold stretch. It's kind of trying to figure out a way of like trying to make those ebbs and flows of his statistic of who he is as a hitter less significant, and making sure there's a little bit more consistency in what he's doing. The walks, I think, are a positive sign in his game, being able to get on base a little more and striking out less. I mean, it was crazy. His first 2 years in the major leagues, it always seemed like if there was a slider down and away, he's going to swing and strike out. Like, that was just a guarantee, it seemed like. And he's gotten to the point where he's able to spit on those pitches, and that's kind of helped him develop a little bit as a hitter. Now you want to see that develop into more consistency and more power, because that's what this team is missing. They really haven't struggled to get guys on base. It's getting those big hits. Since they were 8 games above .500 in late April, since that moment till today, they've been the worst offense in terms of batting average with runners in scoring position. Like that just has to change. That has to improve if they want to have consistency. All their other problems get masked if you're able to score runs. A defensive error doesn't hurt you if you're up 8 runs. A defensive error or a bad outing by a bullpen arm isn't going to hurt you if you're up 6 runs. All those things add up if add up when your offense is struggling, as the Cubs offense has been.
All right. By the way, you're listening to the voice of Andy Martinez from Marquee Sports, who does a great job covering the Cubs. What about Crow Armstrong for a moment, Andy? I mean, where do you see this going?
Yeah, that's another really good question with him. We know about the defense. We know about how good he is defensively. He's played less than almost every other center fielder, and he's a top 10 defensive center fielder by advanced metrics. He's really, really good defensively. But the offense has been really, really struggling. He struck out in June, I think, about a 40% clip, which is just you can't have that from a hitter. And he had like a 300 OPS in June as well. Like that just has to improve. And he's such a good base runner. Like if he can get on base, it's a complete game changer. A single turns into a triple for him. The problem with him is he just doesn't get on base regularly. If he can do that, and I'm curious what Wednesday night's game kind of can do for him. He obviously got a cut on his finger, got 4 stitches today, so he missed the game today. I don't think he would have played anyway with a lefty starter today. But he's an interesting guy. It's like if that game can carry over, and I don't think he'd be a 2-for-4, 2 doubles a game hitter. But if he's hitting maybe like around a 650 OPS, I think the Cubs will take that, because then that allows them another option at the bottom of their lineup where it can kind of turn over. The Cubs offense is kind of predicated on having a lot of guys hitting consistently and having these long drawn out innings, kind of like what we saw today in the fourth inning when the Cubs put up a 5 spot. It's being able to have good at-bats, but if you're having 1 or 2 spots in your lineup, which is what they have right now with Crow Armstrong in the catching position struggling, like it's hard to have those long sustained innings that where you're able to tack on runs.
Yeah. And again, because he has not been thrown out, what is he, 17, 18 for 18, 17?
16 for 16, yeah.
I mean, basically, when he's on base, you're looking at the fact is that it's a double. It's not a single, it's a double.
Right.
And I mean, these.
And I'd argue even it's a triple, because he can probably steal third, too.
Yes, I would agree with you there. So if you're Jed right now and you're looking at concerns at third, concerns behind the plate, is there anybody right now in the farm system that is on the brink of coming up or on the cusp, or are they still in the low minors?
It's kind of tough in the sense that, like, I think you want Morrell to keep playing there just because you know what the potential could be offensively, and there's not a clear answer, at least in AAA. Matt Shaw has been playing a lot of third base, their first round pick last year, and he's been hitting really, really well offensively. I don't know if he comes up this year, and if he does, it could be like what Pete Crow Armstrong did last year, where he maybe plays 2 weeks and is used in the right matchup season, an everyday player. The jump from the minor leagues to the major leagues, we see it league-wide. So many guys have struggled. Jackson Holliday, the top prospect in baseball, came up really, really struggled and was sent down. And Pete Crow Armstrong, another example, right? One of the top prospects comes up and he's struggling. Like, it's really hard to jump from AAA to the major leagues right now. And so I don't know if there's a clear answer that can immediately impact. Is that if the Cubs do decide to buy, is that maybe an area they try to target? Do they try to target maybe a more offensive first catcher that can pair with Miguel Amaya, who the Cubs love his game calling and his work with the pitching staff? Does that maybe help balance out a little bit? Maybe that's what they look at in terms of the trade deadline if they decide to buy.
Great stuff. Hey, Andy, this has been a pleasure. Again, congratulations on where you're at right now and how hard it is to get to there, to this point with Marquee. And as ballplayers often say, you know, as hard as it is to get to the show, in the case of baseball, to use a terminology, but as hard as it is to get to the show, it's even harder to stay there. So I hope you remember that and keep grinding.
Appreciate it, Chuck. Thanks for having me on. And anytime you need me, I'll be here for it.
All right. What's the nickname, by the way, of Quincy?
The Hawks.
The Hawks. All right. Well, go Hawks. Andy, a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
All right. That's Andy Martinez. What a great story. So again, just, you know, continue to grind. And I know it's hard. It is hard. It's not supposed to be easy for young people wanting to get their foot in the door in sports communication, whether it's, you know, the dot-com business or radio or TV or behind the scenes being a producer or a writer. It's not easy, and it shouldn't be easy. You got to just continue to just knock down the doors. And if you can't knock down a door, build a door. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll have more in a moment. This is Chuck Swirsky, 670 The Score, 312-644-6767.
We're back with Chuck Swirsky on 670 The Score.
And welcome back. We are having a great time. We're on the air until 8 o'clock tonight here on July 4th. So please be safe. Maybe right now you got the radio on, or you're going from point A to point B to a party or celebrate. We appreciate it. You can dial us up at 312-644-6767. That's 312-644-6767. And the Score listener line powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. All right, let's go to the highlights. Big, big day for Ian Happ. Big day for the Cubs.
The 1-2. Don't take strike three called, and he knew it. Strikeout number 3 for Jameson Taillon. He These fans would like to see a Cubs rally. Here comes the 3-1. Happ drives one in the air, deep left field. It's got a chance. Gone! 3-run home run, Ian Happ. Cubs lead 3-2. A line drive right near the indentation of the wall. And with one swing, Ian Happ has turned this ball game around.
Happ waits for the 2-2. Here it comes. High drive, deep right field. Oh, baby, forget about this one. It's long. Second 3-run home run of the afternoon for Ian Happ. And it's now 8-2 Cubs over the Phillies here in the fifth. Wow.
Dance. Swing and a miss, and the Cubs win the ball game. Cubs with an easy win on the 4th of July. 10-2 the final.
All right, so there you had play-by-play highlights, courtesy of Pat, Ron, and Zach right here on 670 The Score. Here's the manager of the Cubs, Craig Counsell.
You know, huge swings with men on. We got men on base in front of them for those swings. So two, three-run homers is, you know, puts a smile on everybody's face for sure. And just the beginning. And then after Ian's first home run, we put together another rally with just a walk, double, and Thomas moving the ball forward, and obviously Nico's hit. So, you know, we kept going with the offense today and added on and made for an easy win.
Time's fixed right now. Quality start. We were able to
shut them down. Yeah, I mean, I thought just pounded the strike zone today. No walks. Just made him swing the bat. Just aggressive in the zone, and especially with a lead, it's, you know, it's how you want to do it.
To get to Sanchez early, how he's been pitching. How big was that?
Yeah, he's been excellent for them. And we, you know, we got some rally. We got put pressure on him in the second, and didn't. I forget the inning, but the first and second, and the second inning, yeah. And then we finally cracked through. But we did a good job just putting pressure on him, laying off. It looked like he was a little off with the breaking ball and struggling to throw for strikes, and we got ourselves in some good counts. Ian obviously got himself in a good count a couple times.
You're always talking about, you know, got a slug and out slug, and incrementally looks like some guys are really moving toward that.
Yeah, I mean, it's what puts the big numbers on the board, right? You know, the single run innings, you're looking for them, but the big number comes from the home run, comes from the extra base hit, and we got those today.
All right, that's Craig Counsell, and let's hope the Cubs continue, because they have got to sweep the Angels. I don't want to hear about this 2-3. The Angels are horrible, flat out disgusting. Yeah, I mean, come on, really? The Angels? You gotta win the series number one. They should be able to sweep, period. So, you know who Clint Eastwood is, don't you? Okay. Clint Eastwood, yeah, the guy's an amazing actor, filmmaker, the whole bit. How old is Clint Eastwood? He's like 96? I don't know. Anyway, he did this movie a long time ago, Gran Torino, and he had that line, "Get off my lawn." Well, I'm going to do a get off my lawn moment right here, because today is July 4th, right? And you think of family, you think of friends, you think of socializing, in some cases, fireworks, although the city of Chicago had it last night, and a lot of burbs, they're going to celebrate fireworks in another hour, hour and a half, whatever. And I love July 4th, because what it means, it's more than just, you know, having a brat and a burger and a beverage. It's about freedom. It's about all the women and men who have served our country and are serving, not only in our backyard here in the U.S., but globally. So total respect. Love the respect. And I lived on a Navy base, so I can speak firsthand how much the United States Navy means to me and my father, who was a decorated United States Naval officer. So I think it's great, but I got one issue, Leo. Leo Stoudaker is our producer. Leo, you know what that issue is? What happens every July 4th on national TV? Okay, the hot dog eating con. I think it's repulsive. It's my get off my lawn moment. This guy, Joey Chestnut, ate 57 hot dogs in 5 minutes. That's disgusting. That's ridiculous. I mean, you know, put him on a plane and send him out of town. I mean, 57 hot dogs in 5 minutes. I don't care how much money he makes. You know what? I mean, I know it's his life and his world and his digestive system, but I think it is a horrible message it sends people. 57 hot dogs in 5 minutes. And then Patrick Bertoletti, 58 hot dogs in 10 minutes. 58 in 10. But this Joey Chestnut, 57 hot dogs in 5 minutes. Dude, like, seriously, not good. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, I mean, hey, whatever. Let's go to the phone lines at 312-644-6767. And we're going to have Hub Arcos join us at 640. So let's go to Ed. Ed, you're calling about the White Sox. Let's talk Sox.
Chuck.
Yes.
A long-time listener, first-time caller. Remember you on CFL.
Well, it's better than a long-time caller to first-time listener.
Yeah, I was calling basically about the Sox.
Yes, sir.
You honestly appreciate that. And thanks. Do you think they're really going to trade those two, Croce and Robert?
Okay, well, you know, who was it? Was it in the Sun-Times today, Leo? If you have a copy, was it Rick Morrissey who said, oh, they can't possibly trade Croce. They can't possibly deal Robert. Why not? Why? I mean, how many wins do the Sox have? Let me look at this here. The White Sox have how many victories? 25. They got 25 wins, and we're talking about who should be off the market? No. It doesn't work that way. If you can make the right deal, and you know, Chris Getz is running the show, but if you've got a deal on the table for Croce and Robert, you do it. And again, my concern about Croce is this. He is limited now. They want to make very, very careful about how many innings he's pitching. If you're a contender, why, knowing that he's on an innings count or appearances, why would you do that? Why would you give up prospects knowing that they need to baby his arm? I don't want somebody like, and he's great. He was pitcher of the month in the American League. He's having a great season. I got to think twice, though, whether or not I want him. And on the other hand, if you're the White Sox, no one is untouchable. No one. If you could make the right deal for a pitcher or Robert, you do it. You do it. Flat out, do it yesterday. I'm not into this. Well, he's untouchable. You can't move him. You can't. Hey, oh, really, really. Who's it untouchable? Who? Maybe Ohtani? How many players in sports are really, truly untouchable? I could count on two hands. In the entire scope of the four major sports, how many guys are really untouchable? And I'll tell you what, Caitlin Clark, she's untouchable. If you're Indiana, you're going to the bank every 2 weeks and saying, thank you, God. Okay, we're going to take a break. Back with more in a moment. Chuck on 670 The Score.
We're back with Chuck Swirsky on 670 The Score.
And we'll hear from Hub Arcos in just a moment right here on 670 The Score with you until 8 o'clock tonight. And then we're going to have our salute to Sandberg as we dial it back 40 years ago on June 23rd, 1984, the Sandberg game against Bruce Sutter and the St. Louis Cardinals. 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. We'll also go to your text. And I'll tell you, a lot of people are talking about the White Sox and whether or not they should hold on to these kids. I disagree. I think if the right trade is to be made, there's no untouchables with the White Sox. None. Zero. Period. So that's one storyline. Cubs, Chuck. No. The Cubs need to be sellers. I disagree. I think they need to be buyers. Period. Another story. Chuck, the Bulls should keep DeMar DeRozan. Okay, well, again, I'm all for that if they want to keep him, but it's got to fit into the salary and the direction of the ball club. And if DeMar DeRozan leaves, and there is a lot of speculation in the papers that he's gone, and if he leaves, I got to tell you something. I love DeMar, and I wish him all the best. And wherever he lands, I have nothing but great things to say about guys like DeMar DeRozan, and nothing but great things to say about Andre Drummond, who's now in Philadelphia. We're talking about two really good human beings, period. All right, Hub Arkush has joined us. He covers the Bears, does a fantastic job decade after decade after decade. Hub, how you doing?
I'm good, Chuck. How are you?
Happy July 4th.
Thank you. Same to you.
All right. So, Hub, I'm so fired up about the Bears. This is the most I've been excited about the Bears since the mid-'80s when we were in the booth talking about the Bears, and you were doing a great job on pre, half, and post and in the booth. I mean, the hype is for real, right?
Yeah, I think it is. I think you have to be careful because, you know, they were one of the, 10 or 11 worst teams in the league last year, and you don't immediately go to a Super Bowl. But they've had a really good offseason, and I think the fact that they were playing as well as they were the second half of the season last year versus the first half is also, you know, a positive too, because they've got so many young kids who are improving and are going to continue to improve this year. So I think that they have a real chance to make a run at the playoffs this year, maybe even win a playoff game. I'm not going to pick them for anything more than that until we see more from them. But I think with all the – and it's everything they've done, Chuck. It's the draft. It's free agency. It's trades. And they really have upgraded the roster from where it was when the season ended last year.
All right. Well, we can talk offense, and we're going to get to that in a moment. I want to talk about the Bears' defense. What do you think of the Bears' D?
Well, on one hand, I think that too many people underrated a little bit and weren't paying attention the last 5 weeks of the season. It was almost the best defense in the league, you know, before the playoffs started. And it wasn't the best, but it was definitely a top five group. And, they should be better this year. I like the few changes they've made. Most of the focus and most of the additions were on the offensive side of the ball. But they definitely gotten better at the safety position. They did not make a move. Well, they did, in the fifth round. They drafted an edge rusher who I've talked to a couple scouts. They're very excited about him, and they think he may turn out to be, you know, a steal in the fifth round. But at the end of the day, I'm still wondering about the pass rush. I'm sure you know that. Everybody's talking about it. I was surprised that they didn't add a pass rusher in free agency. I don't think they're done with it yet. They may still. But other than adding a number two pass rusher and the defensive tackles continuing to get better, the two who were rookies last year, I think it's a pretty good defense right now and has a chance to be a top five group for the whole season this year.
So Hub, for the Bears to make the playoffs, what's going to have to come together for them?
Well, you know, they had the answers on defense the second half of the season. They clearly didn't have them on offense, and the reason they didn't have them was Justin Fields. I know that there's a lot of Justin Fields fans out there who want to find somebody else to blame it on, but the bottom line is Fields was not the right guy. You know, if you watched him for 3 years, you should see that. And you know, we believe there's a good chance that Caleb Williams will be, but until we see him do it on an NFL field, you don't know. But when you look at his college career and we look at the talents that he brings, he has everything that you're looking for in a future franchise quarterback, everything you're looking for in a number one overall pick in the draft. And if he proves to be that player, then I think there's a very good chance that the Bears are a playoff team this year.
All right. Well, again, he's got the look, and I know it's on the outside. It's one thing you have to measure somebody's heart, his skill set, but it certainly appears again. And I'm Joe Back at Donuts, okay, Hub? But it certainly appears this guy has the whole package.
Yeah, and you know, Chuck, I'll tell you what impresses me the most about him is that there were a lot of questions leading up to the draft, which there's always going to be for a player who's likely to be the number one overall pick. It wasn't special to Williams. But there was a lot of questions and a lot of concerns that there may be some negatives in attitude, in approach, in where he wants to be. But what we've learned since the draft and in having him here in Chicago now, there's nothing negative that I've seen. And, in fact, I'm very impressed with what he has shown as a leader, as an athlete, as a human being, the way he's handling the media. All of the things that some of the, you know, people who weren't as high on him were trying to pose as negatives leading up to the draft have actually proven to be possibly even positives, you know, from the way he's acted since he got here. So he's done everything right so far. At the end of the day, though, Chuck, they got to put on pads. They got to start hitting each other. And when we see how he reacts to that at the NFL level, we know he did a great job with it at the college level. That's the last piece that we're waiting to see before we can really form an educated opinion.
The great Hub Arkush joining us right here. You can hear a lot from Hub. Training camp just around the corner. Fans are fired up. The Bears are going to be on Hard Knocks. And, you know, Hub, I actually watched. They're doing this off-season. HBO's doing the HBO off-season on the Giants. And I hope you get a chance to check it out. Because, I mean, yeah, I think the team, correct me if I'm wrong, Hub, the team has the final say on what goes on, correct, on the air?
Well, that's the way it is supposed to work, yeah. They are supposed to have the ability to edit stuff, and if there's something they're not happy about, to get it taken out. But there is no clear listing or nowhere I can find where it says who has the final say. You know, can the Bears cancel stuff that the league people want in the show? They can cancel some stuff, but how much total control, or if they have any kind of even total control, that we just, I don't know. I shouldn't say we. I'm sure there's somebody who does know. So there are, you know, a few questions about that. But the bottom line, I'm not a big fan of Hard Knocks because I think it puts the coaches and the players in a bad spot. And I think it causes things to happen that are not necessary, that are unnecessary distractions. That's why the Bears are the last team to agree to Hard Knocks in season this year. They never wanted any part of it. And I can tell you, they still didn't want any part of it, but they knew they were going to have to at some point. That's why it's happening this year in season. But, I think it's probably much ado about nothing other than one more thing for fans to get to watch. And I don't think there's any strong negative or positive, but it's just not something that interests me because I think it puts the players and the coaches in a bad spot. And I think it causes problems for them that they really don't need, that there's the only benefit to it is that the NFL owners are going to make more money off having it on the air.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Hub? I'm going to respectfully disagree. I'm anxious to see it. I want to see it, and I want to see some of the inner workings. And again, these people are polished. Ryan Poles knows what's going on. And I mean, you know, and Eberflus, he knows what's going on. They're going to tell their staff, and they're going to everything. I don't want to say it's going to be rehearsed, but they get the – if something was really sensitive or something that could be termed – difficult, a sensitive issue, something that could really escalate and where you don't want to go down that road, then I think they'll remove that. So that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and Chuck, I'm not sure that we really disagree. I'm not saying anybody shouldn't like Hard Knocks. I hope everybody enjoys it. It's just not for me. And the reason it's not for me is because I tend to focus mainly on the game on the field, on the players on the field, and how they handle themselves off the field. What happens in the TV show is meaningless to me. And the thing that I think people like the most about it is the chance to learn some things about some of these players and coaches that you didn't know. And that's a positive for the fans. I understand that. But I they're doing it at a time. Well, right now it doesn't matter. But when you're doing it in season, I want them focused on winning games. I don't want them focused on doing this TV show. And that's my only negative. But, no, I don't think there's anything, you know, bad about it. And I think that people who enjoy it should continue to enjoy it if that is something that they have fun with.
So, Hub, you go into the season, and I want to just, you know, preface this by saying the whole city is fired up about the Bears. And I really love what Poles has done. So you go into the season, but one has to believe Detroit is still the team to beat, right, in this conference or in this division?
I would think so, yeah. They were clearly the best team in the division last year and you know, obviously very close to a Super Bowl, finally. And so, yeah, when you look at the talent on that roster, although they did have a few losses and a few additions like everybody else, but, yeah, I think it's fair to say that the Vikings have to be not the Vikings, but the Lions have to be the favorite right now. And I would not count out the Vikings. I think everybody is overrating the Packers a little bit, not because they're not good. They are a good young football team, but I don't think they're as ready as some other people think they are. And I wouldn't be shocked if they finished fourth in the league this year. I haven't made that decision yet. Wow. I haven't made my picks yet. But I do think there's a possibility that the NFC North is going to be one of the best divisions in football this year. And I just think it's all four teams – you know, could win it. Okay. Any one of the four could win it. Nothing would shock me.
You know, let me ask you this then as a follow-up. Jordan Love had a fantastic season, and his contract's coming up. Are you sold on him with the small sample size that he finally had a chance to play in and made the most of it? Or are you still saying, you know what, I'm not sure?
Well, I'm certainly sold on his last nine games, you know, the second half of the season and the way he played in the playoffs. But I'm also very concerned about the way he played the first half of the season. And I know those were literally his first NFL starts, but you have to remember there were 3 years where he got to get ready for it. So he should have started out better than a rookie quarterback starting his first year or even his second year. So I think from what we saw last year, there is a chance somehow that the Packers have done it again, and the Jordan Love is very good. But there's no way to put him in the Rodgers, you know, league yet or the franchise quarterbacks that they've had in the past until we see more this year. I need to see a complete season from him to know if we should be talking about him in the same language with the other Packer quarterbacks.
Okay. Hub, you know what? We have not spoken in a while, and I'll say this. For many, you know the story with Hub, who was near death, ladies and gentlemen, came back, and after a period of rehab, I mean, Hub, you sound fantastic. Your voice is strong. You sound great. And, you know, I am thrilled to death for you. I really am. I'm so happy for you.
Well, Chuck, you're too kind, and obviously we've been close for, 40 years. So I really appreciate that. I got very, very lucky, and I will spend the rest of my life trying to thank you and all the people we work with and all of our listeners who just, you know, have been so kind, because it took about a year and a half, and, you know, it was interesting. But, yeah, everything is good now, and then back to normal. Still working on the memory a little bit, but everything else is good, and it's just, you know, fun to be back on the air and talking football again.
Yeah, you sound great. And, Hub, we wish you well. We'll talk again soon, and maybe I'll take a trip out to Hallis Hall. I haven't been to the new Hallis Hall, so I want to see what it looks like compared to the old Hallis Hall.
Well, I will tell you this. Compared to the old Hallis Hall, you'll be remarkably impressed. But even compared to the other top facilities around the league, it's in that category now. It's not the best, but it is in that category, and it is the one thing, or not the one thing, but it's one of the things that the Bears did figure out how to get right. Now, hopefully they can get the stadium right. And that's not totally on them. That's on them and the politicians and everybody else.
Yeah, I agree. All right, be well, Hub. Thank you.
All right, Chuck, thanks for having me. Take care.
Yep, Hub Arkush, join us right here. You're going to hear from Hub. We're going to have so much Bears coverage. It's going to be so much fun on 670 The Score. We have lines open, 312-644-6767. I promise you, we are going to the phone lines, 312-644-6767. That's also where you can text me. We're on the air until 8 o'clock, and then the salute to Sandberg right here on The Score. Bowman, Chuck on 670 The Score.
We're back with Chuck Swirsky on 670 The Score.
And we'll hear from Hub Arkush in just a moment right here on 670 The Score with you until 8 o'clock tonight. And then we're going to have our salute to Sandberg as we dial it back 40 years ago on June 23rd, 1984, the Sandberg game against Bruce Sutter and the St. Louis Cardinals. 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. We'll also go to your text, and I'll tell you, a lot of people are talking about the White Sox and whether or not they should hold on to these kids. I disagree. I think if the right trade is to be made, there's no untouchables with the White Sox. None. Zero. Period. So that's one storyline. Cubs, Chuck, no. The Cubs need to be sellers. I disagree. I think they need to be buyers. Period. Another story. Chuck, the Bulls should keep DeMar DeRozan. Okay, well, again, I'm all for that if they want to keep him, but it's got to fit into the salary and the direction of the ball club. And if DeMar DeRozan leaves and there is a lot of speculation in the papers that he's gone. And if he leaves, I got to tell you something. I love DeMar, and I wish him all the best. And wherever he lands, I have nothing but great things to say about guys like DeMar DeRozan, and nothing but great things to say about Andre Drummond, who's now in Philadelphia. We're talking about two really good human beings, period. All right, Hub Arkush has joined us. He covers the Bears, does a fantastic job decade after decade after decade. Hub, how you doing?
I'm good, Chuck. How are you?
Happy July 4th.
Thank you. Same to you.
All right. So, Hub, I'm so fired up about the Bears. This is the most I've been excited about the Bears since the mid-'80s when we were in the booth talking about the Bears, and you were doing a great job on pre-half and post and in the booth. I mean, the hype is for real, right?
Yeah, I think it is. I think you have to be careful because, you know, they were one of the, 10 or 11 worst teams in the league last year, and you don't immediately go to a Super Bowl. But they've had a really good offseason, and I think the fact that they were playing as well as they were the second half of the season last year versus the first half is also, you know, a positive too, because they've got so many young kids who are improving and are going to continue to improve this year. So I think that they have a real chance to make a run at the playoffs this year, maybe even win a playoff game. I'm not going to pick them for anything more than that until we see more from them. But I think with all the – and it's everything they've done, Chuck. It's the draft. It's free agency. It's trades. And they really have upgraded the roster from where it was when the season ended last year.
All right. Well, we can talk offense, and we're going to get to that in a moment. I want to talk about the Bears' defense. What do you think of the Bears' D?
Well, on one hand, I think that too many people underrated it a little bit and weren't paying attention the last 5 weeks of the season. It was almost the best defense in the league, you know, before the playoffs started. And it wasn't the best, but it was definitely a top five group. And, you know, they should be better this year. I like the few changes they've made. Most of the focus and most of the additions were on the offensive side of the ball. But they definitely gotten better at the safety position. They did not make a move. Well, they did, in the fifth round. They drafted an edge rusher who I've talked to a couple scouts. They're very excited about him, and they think he may turn out to be, you know, a steal in the fifth round. But at the end of the day, I'm still wondering about the pass rush. I'm sure you know that. Everybody's talking about it. I was surprised that they didn't add a pass rusher in free agency. I don't think they're done with it yet. They may still. But other than adding a number two pass rusher and the defensive tackles continuing to get better, the two who were rookies last year, I think it's a pretty good defense right now and has a chance to be a top five group for the whole season this year.
So Hub, for the Bears to make the playoffs, what's going to have to come together for them?
Well, you know, they had the answers on defense the second half of the season. They clearly didn't have them on offense, and the reason they didn't have them was Justin Fields. I know that there's a lot of Justin Fields fans out there who want to find somebody else to blame it on, but the bottom line is Fields was not the right guy. You know, if you watched him for 3 years, you should see that. And you know, we believe there's a good chance that Caleb Williams will be, but until we see him do it on an NFL field, you don't know. But when you look at his college career and we look at the talents that he brings, he has everything that you're looking for in a future franchise quarterback, everything you're looking for in a number one overall pick in the draft. And if he proves to be that player, then I think there's a very good chance that the Bears are a playoff team this year.
All right. Well, again, he's got the look, and I know it's on the outside. It's one thing you have to measure somebody's heart, his skill set, but it certainly appears again. And I'm Joe Back at Donuts, okay, Hub? But it certainly appears this guy has the whole package.
Yeah, and you know, Chuck, I'll tell you what impresses me the most about him is that there were a lot of questions leading up to the draft, which there's always going to be for a player who's likely to be the number one overall pick. It wasn't special to Williams. But there was a lot of questions and a lot of concerns that there may be some negatives in attitude, in approach, in where he wants to be. But what we've learned since the draft and in having him here in Chicago now, there's nothing negative that I've seen. And, in fact, I'm very impressed with what he has shown as a leader, as an athlete, as a human being, the way he's handling the media. All of the things that some of the, you know, people who weren't as high on him were trying to pose as negatives leading up to the draft have actually proven to be possibly even positive, you know, from the way he's acted since he got here. So he's done everything right so far. At the end of the day, though, Chuck, they got to put on pads. They got to start hitting each other. And when we see how he reacts to that at the NFL level, we know he did a great job with it at the college level. That's the last piece that we're waiting to see before we can really form an educated opinion.
The great Hub Arkush joining us right here. You're going to hear a lot from Hub. Training camp just around the corner. Fans are fired up. The Bears are going to be on Hard Knocks. And, you know, Hub, I actually watched. They're doing this off-season. HBO's doing the HBO off-season on the Giants. And I hope you get a chance to check it out. Because, I mean, you know, I think the team, correct me if I'm wrong, Hub, the team has the final say on what goes on, correct, on the air?
Well, that's the way it is supposed to work, yeah. They are supposed to have the ability to edit stuff, and if there's something they're not happy about, to get it taken out. But there is no clear listing or nowhere I can find where it says who has the final say. You know, can the Bears cancel stuff that the league people want in the show? They can cancel some stuff, but how much total control, or if they have any kind of even total control, that we just, I don't know. I shouldn't say we. I'm sure there's somebody who does know. So there are, you know, a few questions about that. But the bottom line, I'm not a big fan of Hard Knocks because I think it puts the coaches and the players in a bad spot. And I think it causes things to happen that are not necessary, that are unnecessary distractions. That's why the Bears are the last team to agree to Hard Knocks in season this year. They never wanted any part of it. And I can tell you, they still didn't want any part of it, but they knew they were going to have to at some point. That's why it's happening this year in season. But, I think it's probably much ado about nothing other than one more thing for fans to get to watch. And I don't think there's any strong negative or positive, but it's just not something that interests me because I think it puts the players and the coaches in a bad spot. And I think it causes problems for them that they really don't need, that there's the only benefit to it is that the NFL owners are going to make more money off having it on the air.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Hub? I'm going to respectfully disagree. I'm anxious to see it. I want to see it, and I want to see some of the inner workings. And again, these people are polished. Ryan Poles knows what's going on, and I mean, you know, and Eberflus, he knows what's going on. They're going to tell their staff, and they're going to everything. I don't want to say it's going to be rehearsed, but they get the if something was really sensitive or something that could be termed. Difficult, a sensitive issue, something that could really escalate and where you don't want to go down that road, then I think they'll remove that. So that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and Chuck, I'm not sure that we really disagree. I'm not saying anybody shouldn't like Hard Knocks. I hope everybody enjoys it. It's just not for me. And the reason it's not for me is because I tend to focus mainly on the game on the field, on the players on the field, and how they handle themselves off the field. What happens in the TV show is meaningless to me. And the thing that I think people like the most about it is the chance to learn some things about some of these players and coaches that you didn't know. And that's a positive for the fans. I understand that. But I they're doing it at a time. Well, right now it doesn't matter. But when you're doing it in season, I want them focused on winning games. I don't want them focused on doing this TV show. And that's my only negative. But, no, I don't think there's anything, you know, bad about it. And I think that people who enjoy it should continue to enjoy it if that is something that they have fun with.
So, Hub, you go into the season, and I want to just, you know, preface this by saying the whole city is fired up about the Bears. And I really love what Poles has done. So you go into the season, but one has to believe Detroit is still the team to beat, right, in this conference or in this division?
I would think so, yeah. They were clearly the best team in the division last year and you know, obviously very close to a Super Bowl, finally. And so, yeah, when you look at the talent on that roster, although they did have a few losses and a few additions like everybody else, but, yeah, I think it's fair to say that the Vikings have to be not the Vikings, but the Lions have to be the favorite right now. And I would not count out the Vikings. I think everybody is overrating the Packers a little bit, not because they're not
good. They are a good young football team, but I don't think they're as ready as some other people think they are. And I wouldn't be shocked if they finished fourth in the league this year. I haven't made that decision yet. Wow. I haven't made my picks yet. But I do think there's a possibility that the NFC North is going to be one of the best divisions in football this year. And I just think it's all four teams, you know, could win it. Okay. Any one of the four could win it. Nothing would shock me.
You know what, let me ask you this then as a follow-up. Jordan Love had a fantastic season, and his contract's coming up. Are you sold on him with the small sample size that he finally got a chance to play in and made the most of it? Or are you still saying, you know what, I'm not sure?
Well, I'm certainly sold on his last nine games, you know, the second half of the season and the way he played in the playoffs. But I'm also very concerned about the way he played the first half of the season. And I know those were literally his first NFL starts, but you have to remember there were 3 years where he got to get ready for it. So he should have started out better than a rookie quarterback starting his first year or even his second year. So I think from what we saw last year, there is a chance somehow that the Packers have done it again, and the Jordan Love is very good. But there's no way to put him in the Rodgers, you know, league yet, or the franchise quarterbacks that they've had in the past until we see more this year. I need to see a complete season from him to know if we should be talking about him in the same language with the other Packer quarterbacks.
Okay. Hub, you know what? We have not spoken in a while, and I'll say this. For many, you know the story with Hub, who was near death, ladies and gentlemen, came back, and after a period of rehab, I mean, Hub, you sound fantastic. Your voice is strong. You sound great. And, you know, I am thrilled to death for you. I really am. I'm so happy for you.
Well, Chuck, you're too kind, and obviously we've been close for, 40 years. So I really appreciate that. I got very, very lucky, and I will spend the rest of my life trying to thank you and all the people we work with and all of our listeners who just, you know, have been so kind, because it took about a year and a half, and, you know, it was interesting. But, yeah, everything is good now, and then back to normal. Still working on the memory a little bit, but everything else is good, and it's just, you know, fun to be back on the air and talking football again.
Yeah, you sound great. And, Hub, we wish you well. We'll talk again soon, and maybe I'll take a trip out to Hallis Hall. I haven't been to the new Hallis Hall, so I want to see what it looks like compared to the old Hallis Hall.
Well, I will tell you this. Compared to the old Hallis Hall, you'll be remarkably impressed. But even compared to the other top facilities around the league, it's in that category now. It's not the best, but it is in that category, and it is the one thing, or not the one thing, but it's one of the things that the Bears did figure out how to get right. Now, hopefully they can get the stadium right. And that's not totally on them. That's on them and the politicians and everybody else.
Yeah, I agree. All right, be well, Hub. Thank you.
All right, Chuck, thanks for having me. Take care.
Yep, Hub Arkush, join us right here. You're going to hear from Hub. We're going to have so much Bears coverage. It's going to be so much fun on 670 The Score. We have lines open, 312-644-6767. I promise you, we are going to the phone lines, 312-644-6767. That's also where you can text me. We're on the air until 8 o'clock, and then the salute to Sandberg right here on The Score.